Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
Spotted Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I can take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is episode number 114. We're recording this on September 19th. It's a Tuesday, and I have my two co-hosts with me. I have Tim. Tim, how are you tonight?
Yo,
Leia, or just yo?
just the yo.
Okay.
Just yo.
And I'm then we do have Chris here as well. You heard that voice a second ago. Chris, how are you?
I'm okay.
You guys are just ready to go, aren't you, tonight?
We need to be more upbeat, damn it.
I have a surprise later in the episode.
Ooh. So. Oh, no.
Wait, I say ooh, and you go, oh, no. What? We're not on the same page, Tim.
Because Chris' surprises are always wildly unpredictable. You never know what it's going to be.
That's why they're a surprise.
I guess so. That's true.
Well, you should be upbeat because we are getting closer and closer to The Last Jedi, right?
We are. We are. It's the middle of September here. We're actually kind of in the final stretch of September, so it's getting close.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's getting close. I'm looking for a trailer, though. I tell you, I want to see one last official clip somewhere, but
hopefully Comic Con. I mean, Comic Con's right around the corner.
That
so
would be cool if they do it at Comic Con. I would actually like that a lot. But there's no Star Wars panel. Really,
there's hardly a Star Wars presence except for the books.
Exactly. Oh, and and we know, Chris, books.
That's what Chris's surprise is going to be, is that he not
read
only read, but he finished the Phasma book. That's it, Chris, isn't it?
No.
Well, don't spoil it. Let him come out with that on his own.
Darn.
Okay, well, before we get to the fun fact or the discussion or, anything else, including Chris's surprise, let's just do the few news items we have. After Force Friday, we talked about that amazing Millennium Falcon that was being released October 1st.
The largest Lego ever.
Right, for like, $18 billion. Did you guys both buy one?
I'm saving my pennies.
Okay.
No way.
I'm not, because I would have to build an addition to my house for it. But
well, somebody's bought them because there are none left. There will not be any available on October 1st.
But the release is October 1st, Lou.
I know. They're all pre-ordered. Done. Did it say what the run was in the story? I don't
remember.
It could have been two.
Well, they had the pre-order and they had a VIP event, which I think was in London. And apparently they're gone. They're gone.
Amazing.
They put everything into these and they're gone.
It shows there's still a lot of love for Lego, right? I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. My buddy John,
that people are crazy.
Well, it does that too. Yeah. I mean, I loved the set. I was drooling over the pictures and the detail they had, but I'm like, it's $800, folks. I mean,
My buddy John, a couple days ago went on to eBay, to see if they were on there. And he said they're upwards of $1,500, on eBay. So,
wow.
Yeah. So some people, clearly bought the limited stock of them with the sole intent of reselling them.
Right, yeah. The speculative market is running rampant. And I hope they don't sell. I mean, at $1,500, I hope people get stuck with them. If people bought them for the implicit reason of just reselling and making money off it, I hope they get stuck.
Yeah.
That's just a little personal soapbox of mine, but yeah.
I can't disagree with it. I mean, I certainly don't want to disparage the entrepreneurial spirit, but boy, when you're buying something like this that fans should be enjoying, and it's expensive enough as it is, to just buy it up for the sole purpose of reselling it kind of ticks me off.
definitely.
We should write a change.org petition about that.
Oh, God damn.
That's called a segue, Chris.
It is a segue. Not a very good one, but it is a segue. Well, you know, Tim, is that the kind of thing you want to use change.org for?
You know, probably not, because I think that's just the wrong thing. Change.org is intended for, you know, good worldly types of efforts, not, you
like
know,
getting rid of a director that you don't want to see making a movie, right?
Some people might want to use it for that. Personally, I don't think that's an appropriate venue, but, you know, it's out there.
Well, apparently there's a petition on change.org to get Lucasfilm to get rid of Abrams from directing Episode 9. Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Tim. It's not really the venue. Not what this was designed for. But
can I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
Who's going to edit this?
That's probably going to be me.
Okay. This whole thing is bullshit. that was just fair warning to whoever's going to do it.
You're going to have your little beep in there, Chris.
I mean, seriously, I would never stand in the way of people voicing their opinions, at least so long as they're not attacking other people and such. And sure, you can have the opinion that you don't want to have Abrams directing a movie. But first of all, change.org is not the appropriate venue for this. That's just philosophically and morally and ethically wrong. Second of all, do you really think that the, I don't know what it's up to, I just checked it before I posted this, like maybe 3,600 signatures or something. Do you really think that Disney, Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy, anyone gives a crap about that? Come on. No, this is a business
there
decision.
There would have to be millions and millions and millions of signatures.
Yeah.
For it to even possibly get on their radar, right?
Exactly. Exactly. If they even care, and they may be as enraged is a strong word, but really annoyed like I am that they would do this on change.org. I just think that's foolish. Mm-hmm. You know, change.org is to, you know, get legislation passed and to, you know, encourage, you know, some morally correct things to happen in our world. But yeah, really?
Exactly. You know, trying to get a movement of people worldwide behind something to change society for the better, not to petition a company to make a change of who's in charge of something.
Yeah.
And the reason he gave was, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, he made a movie that this one person thinks is too similar to what A New Hope was. Okay, that's bothering you enough that you need to petition Lucasfilm to make a change?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Nor do I. But, you know, I mean, it might be the right move for some people from a certain point of view, Lou.
God, Tim.
Boom! There it is!
Two in a row, Tim. Two in a row. Yeah, from a certain point of view, Tim, you're absolutely correct. Now, you know, if someone was to write stories, maybe, and
that's such a
collect them in a book of that kind of stuff,
yeah,
would you, you know, hey.
Like a compendium of stories.
What's that? A compendium. Ooh, that's a big word. Yeah.
I like compendium. It's a good
So tell us about this, Tim. Tell us about this new compendium of stories that you want to discuss.
Yeah, well, from a certain point of view, it is billed as 40 stories celebrating 40 years of Star Wars. So we have a tremendous slate of authors, and even some authors that are a little surprising. Like Ashley Eckstein is co-authoring one of the stories in this. Will Wheaton is authoring one of the stories in this.
That's cool.
But we also have some favorites like Jason Fry, Gary Whitta, and a number of others who are putting together a bunch of short stories, which are, as I understand it, these stories are not necessarily canonical. So this is kind of like the Lego Freemaker stories, where it's what they've termed canon adjacent.
Yep.
Where it's possibly canonical, but not necessarily, and it just, you know, they're just little fun side stories about some of our favorite characters, about characters that we've never heard of before, and in settings, again, both familiar and unfamiliar to us, and it just seems like a really fun and cool book. What we've seen over the last week on social media is that a lot of the authors have kind of used the same fundamental graphic for this, and they have a little quote along with a credit with the title of their short story and the author in this. So they've been putting them up on Twitter, and I've seen them on Instagram, and I'm sure they're up on Facebook and some other venues. So really just very cool. I think it'll be a fun read. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Tales books.
Mm-hmm.
From Legends. So they had, you know, Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales from Jabba's Palace, two or three other different Tales books. And those are fun. They're short stories, they're quick reads. They venture into little side characters with things, and once in a while you kind of get a cameo of a major character, and they're just cool, fun stories. So I'm really looking forward to it. The book comes out on October 3rd, so that's right around the corner. That's really just a couple weeks from now, and I'm definitely going to be grabbing that and consuming that pretty quick, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. You know, the stories when they do these that are, like you said, adjacent to the stuff we're getting, I think it's cool because it's in-universe. It feels like Star Wars. And I think we've said this before on some of the shows recently, that the books we're getting now, so much of the book is backstory, yes, but it doesn't feel like Star Wars to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that bothers me that we get a story like, you know, the Phasma book that we're going to do a little special episode on, Tim and I, that, you know, so much of the book is about Phasma's life before anything to do with the Empire. Mm-hmm. And or the First Order, and it doesn't feel like Star Wars. It could be anybody on this world, you know, in a survival situation. It doesn't have to be a Star Wars character, and I want to know about the Star Wars-esque part of it. So these kind of stories from a certain point of view sound like they're going to be a really good thing to have and be more in universe.
Yeah, I agree. Chris, you are the most critical. Uh-huh. Of everyone with the books, what are your thoughts and feelings on From a Certain Point of View?
Well, I probably still won't buy this unless maybe I have like a spur of the moment type thing at Comic-Con and want to get the exclusive edition, you know, if it doesn't like sell out. But I might actually read this. In what? Some way, or not, really? Or not the whole thing, because I'm not interested in like a fair portion of the book. But some of the stories sound pretty decent. But I've talked about wanting short stories for a while,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we're getting. And some of them are kind of lame, or the topics seem kind of lame. Or the characters involved, but there are a few in there that seem worthwhile to me.
Awesome. Now, which ones are you looking forward to?
Well, I don't have a full list, or I would be able to be a little bit more concrete. But I know there's one that somehow has to do with Qui-Gon. There's another one that may or may not have to do with Biggs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those are the two that come to my head, but I'm sure there's probably a couple more. But worth buying? Not really, maybe, but definitely. I think at least going to the bookstore and sitting down in the bookstore and reading it and then putting it back on the shelf.
Okay.
Well, now, if they have a copy of it at New York Comic Con and they have an, you know, authors there to sign it, Chris.
Yeah.
You might be able to do that.
That's what I was just thinking. So I wasn't aware, Chris, you mentioned that they're going to do an exclusive release of this at Comic-Con? Or is that just you guess, your guess? Okay. If they are, that's really awesome, and I would love to pick that up. And I think, how cool. I mean, you've got 40 stories. You have a number of the stories co-authored, so maybe even 50 different authors. How cool would it be to use this as, like, your autograph book?
Yeah.
You know, just to collect a butt ton of signatures from these authors. I think that would just be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really sweet. And a lot of the times, the authors especially, they're not charging for autographs. They're at the desk or at the booth of the different publishers, and they'll be happy to sign wherever you bring them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious about what you guys think, and I don't want to get into a whole big discussion, but it was said that, I think it was mentioned before, that this book is like half canon, but not really. And it kind of annoys me a little bit that they make such a big deal about, oh, everything is canon now, except where we don't want it to be. And I'm like, you know, what is the point if you're just going to...
Hmm. Well, this gives them some flexibility, I think, though. I mean, novels are one thing. This is something entirely different, right? So I kind of give them a pass on that whole canon thing, I suppose. I would like everything to be canon. I would like everything to be just, you know, hey, this is it, cut and dried. Like we said before, everything is canon. But if they're going to do something like this, I can, like I said, give them a pass on it. If they said, here's a novel that you really want to read, but it's not canon, I'd have a problem with that, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's fun to allow the authors to kind of flex a little bit of muscle. And even though a lot of the authors under this new canon have said that Lucasfilm and the Story Group largely have not been restrictive at all, and they've been very receptive to, like, you know, 97% of the ideas that the authors pitched them. There are obviously certain paths that they can't venture into, or characters they can't venture into, just simply because their novels need to be fairly focused on what it is that they're talking about. So, you know, when Delilah Dawson is writing about Phasma, well, she can't write about something in the Mos Eisley Cantina. I don't know what she's writing for this offhand, if she is. I don't recall. But it's just, you know, I think kind of cool for an author, especially an author who's a fan. And I think something like this really shows that there are a number of authors, both amongst the more or less famous mainstream authors, that have done Star Wars stuff, along with other folks who may have done some writing in the past, but really haven't contributed a lot to the literature of Star Wars, who just kind of get to play in this sandbox a little bit. I'm cool with it. I mean, they're short stories, so it doesn't have a huge amount of relevance. They're really just intended to be fun. And really, even the old Legends Tales books, I kind of always took them as just being kind of a little more whimsical. They were just fun stories that maybe weren't necessarily canon. Sometimes they gave some cool backstories on some, you know, B or C line characters, or, you know, filled in little gaps of an event between two scenes in a movie or something like that, that just kind of made you thought, oh, hey, that's cool. So I'm all right with it. You know, I mean, if they start releasing full length novels that they're saying aren't necessarily canon, then I'm going to kind of wonder and say, gosh, you know, why the effort then?
Right. Yeah. Why bother having this if it's not what you're going to follow through with?
Yeah.
But they're also going to do, along with this, an audiobook format.
Yeah. And I know, you know, Lou, you... I'm all over the audiobooks.
And, yeah.
And I very rarely actually read. I'm kind of, I really read something anymore. But I do the audiobooks in the car. And the short stories in audiobook format, I think, are awesome. I've done a couple of them over the years. World War Z was originally a collection of stories, and that was, you know, kind of a cool audiobook. But this one, doing different authors for different sections of the book, different narrators, sounds really interesting to me. I'm trying to bring it up on Audible now, but the story that you linked to here has different I just lost my page here. Here we go. You know, they're saying John Hamm from Mad Men is one of the guys doing the book, and he's actually going to be narrating the Boba Fett story in here.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Patrick Harris is listed in here, and I think that's all there. They won't be reading the whole book, and the other readers include Jonathan Davis, Mark Thompson, Ashley Eckstein. So, yeah, so some good names in here, Mark Thompson especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Mark Thompson has done a lot of stuff. He's in a lot of Star Wars stuff in the past, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. He had an awesome presentation at Celebration that we saw.
Okay. And Janina Gavankar, she is the person who has voiced Iden Versio for the Battlefront video game, for Battlefront 2.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, she's been all over the promotions for it. She's been going to, I think she was a big presence at both D23 as well as San Diego Comic-Con promoting Battlefront 2 and other stuff around that game, and as well as kind of on the side the Battlefront 2 book. So it's kind of cool that she's in there, and she's actually pretty well spoken. She's done some acting and a fair amount of other voice work. So I think she'll do very well in this.
Mm-hmm. So I just pulled up the Audible page on this book, and let's see, yeah, same day, October 3rd, 15 hours and 2 minutes. So it's a pretty good lengthy book. I like that. They're giving a little bit different narrators and stuff on here. They're saying that okay, the Gary Whitta story bridges the gap between Rogue One and A New Hope through the eyes of Captain Antilles. That sounds really cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. this looks awesome. I can't wait for this.
Yeah, I think it'll just be a fun read.
Yep.
And actually, I think it'll be fun to listen to. I don't do a lot of audiobooks, and particularly if I get the physical book, then I really don't do the audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems with that slate, just that small slate of narrators, I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, well, I clicked the pre-order button already, so I am in for that. I will probably also pick up the hard copy, though, or the physical copy at New York Comic Con if there's authors to sign it, which would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see here. Star Wars and Marvel to leave Disney. I'm making up words now. Disney Netflix streaming service. We've talked about this in the past. And is there any new news on this, Tim? Was this
Well, the news here is that there was still some speculation that the Star Wars franchise and the MCU might still be left to Netflix, and Netflix is lobbying really hard to be able to keep them.
Right. Right. Now, this is official now.
Yeah, Netflix had a contract to have the Star Wars films, and apparently, I guess Disney just tore up that contract and said, nope, you don't get the Star Wars films anymore. So I guess they have Rogue One now, they're going to get The Last Jedi. And I think after that, I don't think they're going to get anything. I don't even think the Han Solo movie will fall within that time frame. Or if it does, it's pretty much right at the end of it. And then when this cutover happens over to Disney streaming service, all of that stuff presumably is going to get yanked and will then be housed officially at Disney now.
So in other words, I have to buy the movie now.
Well, or you can subscribe to the Disney streaming service once
I will pass.
So
yeah,
it's tough, and it's, I believe what we mentioned before, and we had a lot of discussion between Echo Base episodes and Random Chatter episodes on this. Yeah. As we focused on the Star Wars content here and kind of everything else over there. But I think that when we say Marvel or we say MCU, that only relates to the movies. That does not relate to the Defenders type of series and now Punisher. So, you know, the Jessica Jones, the Daredevil, that kind of stuff. That stuff should still be staying with Netflix because Netflix actually co-produced that. So they
that is a Netflix property, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we talked about this on Slack as well, too, and there was actually some more discussion over the last couple of days about this. And they were talking about how, you know, kind of coming down on me for this, saying that, well, now I have to subscribe to all these services. And the point of doing the cable cutting thing and then doing your online stuff is just to get the stuff you want to get only. But the problem is, with so many things diversifying into so many different streaming services, you're going to have all these streaming services to get what you want.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to have the Star Wars stuff, I got to go to Disney now. If I want to have, you know, Star Trek, I got to get the CBS All Access thing. Some stuff will only be available on Netflix. Some stuff will only be available on Hulu. I mean, at what point do I just give up and say, you know what, I'm just going to keep cable and not worry about this?
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Yeah, it's very challenging when you're paying $5 to $15 per service to get access to it. And then, quite honestly, even with cable, you're still not getting access to some of these things.
Right.
You know, Netflix is Netflix. You can't get access to the Netflix stuff through your cable. So you're still missing out. And it's just, it's very frustrating. And I understand why the companies kind of want to have their own thing. But obviously, from the consumer perspective, it's just it's tough, and we've talked a ton about this. But
yeah, we're just beating a dead horse at this point.
yeah.
There's something's going to change at some point. This will all of a sudden the clouds will part, and people will go, "Oh, this is the way to do it." But
What do you guys think that Netflix got out of this deal? Because I mean, it had to have been something, and something tells me that it's probably a lot of money or some kind of exclusive thing.
Unless there was some sort of a loophole in the contract, particularly for Star Wars, because Star Wars was a very specific contract that Disney had with Netflix. So unless there was something in there that allowed Disney to basically cut this contract off and pull it, which when you're dealing with large companies like this, I'm suspecting they didn't. So there probably had to have been a payout.
Well, either that or...
Which I imagine it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but yeah. Also, when was the contract up anyways? I mean, it's not that they just broke the contract. I think they're doing this in conjunction with whatever is ending on parts of their contract.
Rogue One was the beginning of that contract.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, so this is a fairly new contract. I mean, I think the ink was signed on this... 6 months ago, maybe. So yeah, Rogue One was the first film to be included in that. Episode
all of
eight.
Disney, all of Disney though. I mean, how long have they been doing stuff with Disney in general? And at what point did they, you know, the rest of the Disney stuff just go away off Netflix?
That's true. I mean, Netflix does cycle things in and out, and I who knows what. You know, some of these other smaller contracts are. I have no idea. I mean, Disney owns a lot of stuff, so there's certainly a lot of titles that are going to get pulled from Netflix, not just Star Wars and MCU stuff, but they're certainly among the most prominent and really the most profitable. I mean, I think a lot of people who have Netflix who either got it so they can access this stuff or it was at least one of the reasons on their list. Where they can say, oh, hey, you know what? I know that Netflix gets all the Marvel films, so I don't have to buy them. I can go there. Chris says, hey, I don't have to buy Rogue One because I can go to Netflix to watch it.
And now I will buy Rogue One because. and honestly,
and
it'll probably be cheaper.
No matter what.
Yeah, just a new story I just picked up just as we're doing this. Netflix has caught a gigantic fish in the movie creator ocean. Streaming video company is now hiring Shonda Rhimes, prolific television producer behind ABC hit shows Grey's Anatomy and Scandal. Uh-huh. ABC is one of the media properties owned by Disney, which has decided to stop its Netflix shows. Instead, these will be reserving its shows. Okay, so yeah, Netflix is now poaching people from from Disney properties trying to get their own stuff going, but...
Interesting,
yeah.
Well, I mean, to get Shonda Rhimes, that's a pretty big catch.
That's big. Yeah.
And the Netflix original stuff has mostly been pretty successful. So, you know, you get someone with a big name like that, and I think that's going to continue to draw people. So, good for them.
Definitely. Well, one last story before we get into Tim's fun fact, and this one is something that we need help from our audience.
Oh, yeah.
Lucasfilm has partnered with the ISS, the International Space Station, for a new, very cool Star Wars-themed patch for some of the missions on the space station. This is not something that's going to be sold. Only available to people that are working on the project, I guess. And audio on video sites coming up. Sorry about that. Getting distracted. So this patch looks really, really cool. I mean, this will be the patch that will be worn on the flight suits on the space station for the astronauts that are up there. And it is a top-down view of the Millennium Falcon. And it has the ISS pictured in the sky over a planet. And on the planet is Chopper, BB-8, and K2SO.
And the background of the planet is also the Death Star.
It could just be a moon.
That's no moon.
It looks like
a moon.
That's
a space station.
It's too big to be a moon. too big to be a space station, sorry. But this looks really, really cool. So, you know, if anybody out there is, you know, working with this and get their hands on them, let us know.
Yeah, yeah, your friends at Echo Base would definitely like to have them. While we are in a, you know, base on another planet, we're like so far backwater. Mm-hmm. No one likes to visit us.
So the patch itself is, you know, except between the partnership between Lucasfilm and CASIS, Center for Advancement of Science and Space, a nonprofit organization that manages experiments on board the ISS. More than 100 experiments have launched in the ISS since in 2017 alone. So that's pretty cool. I mean, I've been a big fan of space exploration since I was a kid. I went to school down in Florida, so I was about maybe 45 minutes from Cape Canaveral, and I had a lot of friends that worked at the Cape and so forth. So I've kind of been plugged into this, but I haven't been for a while. And this kind of thing is just so cool. Anything that deals with actual real space launches and can work with the fandom stuff that we deal with all the time, I think is great. It just brings more awareness to it, more interest in space exploration. I just hope they keep doing stuff like this. It'd be nice if they sold these patches to us.
It's a really neat partnership. It's just cool to see that, you know, Lucasfilm is promoting science, and the science side is giving the nod to Lucasfilm that, hey, you know what, probably 95% of their employees are Star Wars fans. And of those, a lot of them probably credit their interest in doing this kind of research and the work they've done in their career to the inspiration that Star Wars gave them. So I just think that's just really cool. I think it's awesome.
Very cool. Well, Tim, we've been waiting patiently now for your fun fact or trivia this week.
Okay.
What do you have for us?
This week's trivia, we've been doing pretty awesome with a lot of actor-based questions. So this is another one that is actor-based. So what actor who was in the original trilogy did not play an A-level character? I'll put that out there. Because that's relevant. So what actor who was in the original trilogy appeared in Revenge of the Sith playing a different character? And it's not an obscure actor. It's still one that you know.
Okay. In Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
Not an A-level actor. Do we get any hints?
This is an actor that we've actually discussed in a previous trivia question.
I mean, I know an answer, but it's an A-level actor.
Who is it?
Anthony Daniels.
That's true. Anthony Daniels, yes. But, yeah, no, not
like,
to...
Not as 3PM.
Right. He's not the one that I'm that I have in mind here. But you are correct. Lou, any guesses?
Was the Revenge of the Sith appearance a cameo? Like a blink and you miss it type thing?
It was pretty brief.
Okay.
And I believe
did
it
they
was
appear
only...
in all three. Did they appear in all three original trilogy movies or just one?
They appeared in Empire and Return of the Jedi. And in their appearance in Revenge of the Sith, I believe, was only toward the end of the film.
Okay.
Lou, any guesses?
No, not yet. Still thinking here.
Audience? Anyone?
Could we see the face of this person, or where it was behind a mask?
You could see the face of the person in Revenge of the Sith. I don't believe they had their face exposed in the original trilogy films.
Is Revenge of the Sith the only prequel they were in?
Yes.
It's got to be a non-A-level character. We're talking about A-level characters, right? Not actors.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And even still, probably not regarded as an A-level actor in the series. I mean,
yeah.
You know, played a popular character, but not necessarily A-level.
I keep coming back to Warwick Davis, but he was in all the prequels, I think, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for it?
No, not yet.
I need another, I want another hint. I want something a little bit more. Was he in all three original?
No.
Just Empire and Jedi.
Oh, just
right?
Empire and...
Correct. Okay. Yep. He played in Revenge of the Sith, he played a pilot.
And what you said was at the end?
I believe it was just in the end that he was shown.
Okay. God, it's been a while since I've seen Revenge of the Sith.
Specifically, he was Bail Organa's pilot.
Or his pilot in the speeder, or on the Tantive IV?
The Tantive IV, which... I've learned, and I got to throw a nod here to another Star Wars podcast. This one will go to Star Wars and Character because that's where I got this from. And the discussion they had there was there's some... It apparently appears in writing somewhere that in Revenge of the Sith, this was actually the Tantive III.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I am drawing a blank.
Yeah, Chris? I have no idea. Not unless you want to give any more hints.
Yeah.
Jeremy Bullock.
See, I was thinking that.
Really?
But, Tim, I got to contest, man. I got to contest. That, I'm sorry, but that's A-level.
Okay.
Well, you said not A-level character, though, right? That we say not actor, but character.
Right, right.
Because, I mean, the pilot of the Tantive III or IV, whichever one it was, would not be an A-level character, right?
Well, right, and particularly not an A-level character reference was from the original trilogy. I mean, so I would say, you know, your 3PO R2-D2... you know, we're talking that level of character that we also saw reflected back in the prequels. Boba Fett, I don't know. For as much as I love Boba Fett, I wouldn't consider him an A-level character.
Oh, I think he's an A-level character just based on his recognition. You know, he's recognizable. I mean, the captain of the Tantive III or IV in Revenge of the Sith is not somebody you would pick out of a lineup and say, yeah, that's the guy that piloted that ship.
Right. Yep.
Doing a quick search, it's Captain Colton
Yes, Captain Colton is his name.
And it says he piloted the TTV-4 during the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, yeah, I wouldn't consider that character an alien character, but
No. I meant that because I was asking that is the character in the original trilogy a level? And Tim said no.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, no, then Tim, you're wrong. because there's no way Boba Fett is not an A-level character. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of lines, obviously.
That's why I was trying to think of like background characters, because I knew this answer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just a definition thing, because to me, an A-level character is somebody who's prominent. I mean, you're going to show 9 out of 10 people a picture of Boba Fett, and they're going to go, yeah, it's Boba Fett.
Yeah. I mean, I was just kind of thinking in the greater, really, how much screen time does Boba Fett have? Not much.
Well, how much time did Vader have?
In the entire first act of Return of the Jedi.
Are you saying Vader's not an A-level character?
Hey, let me ask you this. Is Phasma an A-level character?
No.
See, I think she is just because she's recognizable.
Yeah. She's part of the toys.
So recognition alone makes it an A-level
character? That means that Constable Zuvio is an A-level character, Chris. That's not right either.
And everyone by now recognizes Constable Zuvio because it's the one toy that you can find in every freaking store.
Oh, my God. I went into a Target last week, Toys R Us, and they must have had 30 of them swinging from the pegs. I'm like, what are you doing? Burn these things. Give them away. Do something.
At least, repackage them into something. Sell them as part of a four-pack of,
a four-pack failed of Zuvio clones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, that was good, Tim. I mean, a little obscure, but good. Yeah,
that's impressive. I apologize if my wording confused you guys.
No, I wouldn't have got it even if you were more clear. Believe me, that was a little above my normal level of knowledge, but cool. Okay, so who picked our discussion topic for this week?
That was me.
Then I'm going to let you introduce it.
Oh, okay. Man, you just keep... Here, Tim, talk about this.
I'm going to just dish stuff off to you, Tim.
So our discussion topic, I figured we had a handful of news items, and I knew we would have a little bit of discussion around them. I figured we wouldn't have anything that was really long or protracted. So I wanted to throw something fun in here that we could all have some good input into, toss around some ideas. And so the question here is, what is your favorite planet in Star Wars?
Kamino.
Why?
because it looks cool.
And why? And you can't just say because it looks cool.
Because.
Let's give me some exposition here, Chris. We want context.
Well...
Our it listeners
rains there all the time, and I like rain and thunder.
There's no
and
beaches.
It would make for it. I don't care. It would make for a nice like sleep. My favorite thing to do when I sleep is to have a thunderstorm or rain or something outside, like hitting the window. And it's the perfect way to go to sleep. And like every night I would have that and it would just be wonderful.
Okay.
Well, I have to, before I talk about my favorite world in Star Wars, I'm going to have to say that I dislike most of the worlds because they're just one climate.
Yeah.
That's not realistic. Yeah. I mean, we have an ice planet. Yeah, the whole planet's ice. We have a desert planet. The whole planet is desert. We have two of those. I mean, come on. I mean, there's different climates when you move around the planet, hopefully, unless it's a dead world, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's temperate, you're going to have some tropics, some, kind of like the Earth, right?
Yeah.
If I had
it to... It seems like Naboo is the only one that should have a normal range of climates. Even though we only see it kind of in essentially a summer type of lush green climate.
Yeah, and in some of the novels have talked about Alderaan being that way, but can't go there anymore.
What do you mean? Why not? I've got tickets.
Good luck.
Why can't we go to Alderaan?
Good luck. It depends on what time frame you're in, I guess.
No, I seriously just got my tickets last week. Why can't I go to Alderaan?
Well, when you get there, it's going to be a bumpy ride when you jump out of hyperspace.
You might have heard something about like some asteroid field or something, but it, no big deal. All the runs should still be nice this time of year, right?
It hurts a little cool. Or hot in this case, I guess. But if I had to pick a planet that I like the thought of the planet, it would have to be Scarif.
Mm.
I mean, it's tropical, got beaches. You know, I mean, sand with no water doesn't do me any good. So, you know, Tatooine and Jakku are out, but you know, sand and water together, hey, I'm all over this. I'm not sure I'd want to be on the beach when I see a bunch of short troopers kind of marching through the surf. But
that was loud.
If I didn't do anything wrong, I guess I wouldn't have anything to worry about, right?
Right.
I will pass on that, Lou.
What's that?
Your beach reference. I hate the beach.
You won't come to Scarif with me?
I mean, I'll come visit, but that's I'm thinking about
a nice
it.
Swim up bar somewhere. We can kind of sit back, have a few beverages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess part of the planet's a little singed.
A little bit.
But other side's probably fine. Other than that, though, you're right. Most planets are just one climate, and it doesn't really.
Yeah, well, a lot of my one planets still manage to fascinate me, and in all different ways. Empire Strikes Back, my favorite movie, and I think one of the biggest reasons behind that is Hoth and the Battle of Hoth and everything that happened in and around Echo Base, which is why I'm hanging out here right now with you guys. And for as much as I like winter, I guess it would kind of, really get old to just be in perpetual winter all the time. Tatooine is, for as much as Tatooine has kind of become cliche in Star Wars, that like all events center around Tatooine, for some strange reason, it's that also makes it very mythical and comfortable from the perspective of it's like you feel like you know your way around. And even though it's just a massive planet of vast desert with, these few little cities or settlements, it just feels comfortable and very familiar. And, it would just be cool to take a stroll around Mos Eisley and stop in the cantina for a drink and, go see Watto to buy some parts and gamble or something and, go visit the huts. And
well, now, talking about what's on the planets is different than what planet you like to hang out on. I mean, I guess maybe I was thinking too literally of what planet you like is in the planet, not like what there is to do in the planet.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's why I kind of left the question open-ended intentionally, just that there's just so many options. And, it could also be the people and creatures that are there. Mm-hmm. Coruscant also, and I'm not a city person. I do visit them and I don't mind visiting them, but I can't live in them. But the whole concept of Coruscant fascinates me.
Yeah,
you know, a planet that is just one giant freaking city. How interesting would that be?
And I love some of the discussions of Coruscant when they talk about it in a lot of the legend novels about how, it was just built on and built on and built on, and the levels below are just forgotten about. And I'm like, okay, first off, that can't be very safe. How does that whole thing support itself? But it just seems a very, very cool and story rich environment.
Yeah.
What could happen down below levels? I mean, that just sounds so intriguing and so fascinating.
Yeah. And presumably we're going to see in the Han Solo film, we're going to see Corellia.
Right.
Which will be interesting. Sense. I mean, it's something that we've, heard about from early on in Star Wars. So it'd be really neat to explore that. And hopefully we'll see, two or three other planets come up in that. I mean, probably among all the planets that we've seen, Mustafar does not interest me at all. I have no interest in going to Mustafar. Probably followed pretty closely by Utapau.
I don't want to go to Utapau because of those scary looking people that live there.
Yeah, they're a little creepy.
There's no war here. Unless you've brought it with you.
That's right. Well, you know, what about going to Kashyyyk? I mean, a bunch of tree forts.
No.
Kashyyyk could be cool. I think it'd be awesome to hang out with the Wookiees.
They just seem so laid back.
Would be a good time.
But you would always have to like walk on eggshells around them.
I bet they are awesome drinkers. Yeah.
Yeah, a Wookiee pub, that'd be a place to be.
Yeah. And I'm betting they can put down a lot. I mean, I'm pretty sure they could, you know, drink all of us combined under the table.
You know, you were talking about... Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm good.
No, I was just going to say, you were talking about Coruscant and all of the, like, things below, like, the main city, mm-hmm. like, the levels. And it reminds me of Star Wars 1313, which we never saw because... LucasArts went down the drain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was supposed to take place underneath the main city.
Yeah. Yep. And the premise of that story was really cool. I was really looking forward to that, and it's too bad that it got tanked.
Yeah. That's the kind of spinoff we need to see, not some lame Han Solo crap.
How about Endor? You guys feel like hanging out with...
No.
Little murder bears?
No.
Murder bears. Too many trees.
Yeah.
The teddy bears do, though.
Question for you guys. Before you
say it, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is it Endor or Endor's moon?
I'm sorry, say that again. Both.
Is it Endor or Endor's moon?
It is
The battle took place on the moon of Endor.
Okay, so Endor is separate.
Endor is the planet, and Endor is apparently also the moon. This is something. Really? The only reason I know this is because I had to look it up. This fairly recently, within maybe the last couple of months, I kind of came up with the same question myself. I was reading something, and it said, "Oh." You know, they were the Death Star was stationed above Endor, and I'm like, no, it wasn't. It was stationed above the moon, over one of Endor's moons. And I looked it up, and actually, the moon is also called Endor because someone couldn't be that creative.
Yeah, you know, it's the Endor system. The planet was Endor. Endor, also known as the forest moon of Endor or the sanctuary moon, mm-hmm. a small forest moon that orbited.
The Endor.
Outer rim planet of the same name. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Endor orbited Endor. Yeah. That's like Earth orbiting Earth.
Yeah.
That bothers me. Well, I ask because...
you know, these Lucasfilm guys, they weren't very creative. I mean...
In the Galactic Battlegrounds game, one of the locations you can fight on is called Endor's Moon. And I was thinking, wait a minute. Is it Endor or Endor's moon? I think I've looked up that before, but that's just dumb.
I never knew it had its own name. I thought it was just Endor's moon. You know, it's kind of like Endor, we had the moon.
You have Endor, and then Endor, and then in the Endor system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Somebody was not on their A game the day they made the names for that movie. Yep. Wow.
George probably just like got lazy because it was the last one. I was so tired. I'm never making more
of these movies again.
Yeah. How about Jakku? Any takers for a trip to Jakku?
No.
No, too much like Tatooine. No? Sands, abrasive, gets everywhere.
Jakku to me seems even worse off than Tatooine. I mean, it's like really the armpit of it's the armpit of the dead guy in the universe. I mean, really bad.
You had a whole battle there, and they didn't even bother cleaning it up after themselves. Like,
no.
I mean, because the Alliance won, so, I mean, they didn't even clean up their own ships. They just left it there. Come on.
Big Star Destroyer just lay there. In the
so that is so rude. Come on.
What other planets? Any others that we haven't really covered?
Let's see here. What was the planet they went to Yaddu in Rogue One? Was that where they were going to get the plans?
Oh, yes. Or yeah.
Going to what part of the mission was
where that? Where it was raining?
Yeah.
Yes.
Raining and dark, kind of looked kind of rocky mm-hmm. and not very where inviting.
Where the Imperial lab was, where
Galen was working.
Yeah, where Galen was working, Krennic was kind of headquartered.
Yep, no, you know? I don't think I'd go there.
Yeah, that place seems pretty uninviting. Not very welcoming at all.
I'd like to learn more about Kessel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like a nice place to visit, but, you know, wouldn't mind knowing more about it.
I gotta say, to jump back to Coruscant for a minute, I think that was probably the best part of Attack of the Clones was the amount that they explored Coruscant, which we never really saw before, or at least to that extent. You know, we saw a couple of snippets in the extended editions at the end of Return of the Jedi, but this was the first time that we saw a little bit in Phantom Menace, but it was a couple of wide shots and the rest of it was in offices. But in Attack of the Clones, it was really, I mean, they explored it. They were in different levels. They were in this other bar. They went to Dex's diner. They were in the streets. They were flying through through the buildings and stuff. There's really so much more of Coruscant that was opened up in that movie. And it was really cool. It was really neat. I like that part of it.
Yeah, I like the daytime shots of it better, too, where you could see all the traffic in the sky and how that play. It was just really cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a big fan of bugs, so I'm going to say no to a trip to Geonosis.
No. Geonosis is awful.
Yeah. Yeah, Geonosis is another place that seems rather uninviting.
Just play the opening act of Republic Commando, because you're on Geonosis. I'll pass on that.
Yep.
So, what about Yavin?
Oh, Yavin. I don't like humidity, so the whole jungle thing just kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be cool to kind of explore the runes, but beyond that, no, I'm not one for humidity, and I certainly that's why I definitely wouldn't want to go visit Dagobah either. Not a fan of snakes.
Yeah,
Seem to be a lot of those hanging around there, and then like you might accidentally stumble into some cave.
Yeah, and see
yourself.
Yeah.
little creepy. So yeah, we covered a lot of them.
I think we have. Yeah, I'm sure we missed some. And this would be a prime time to tell everybody that they wanted to, you know, tell us the ones we missed that they want to go to and check more, you know, check out more of. Email.
Yes.
You know, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Email, Twitter, and you that can find, Slack thing yeah, that we
you,
do.
You can find me on Scarif. I'll just be hanging out on the beach with a cocktail.
Speaking of listener feedback, there's another segue.
You know,
this is for Chris.
Tim, you are sounding a lot like Joelle because she loves her segues.
He sounds more masculine.
So, I guess I have to, you know, do the feedback this week.
Sure. Okay. Lou has made me do everything else, so
sure. And you gotta do something. And, you know, Chris put these in, right? I mean, these are Chris's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think Tim put the first one in, but yes. The second one
the first
was
one
me.
Literally just says Ben, and I don't really know what to do with that.
Well, we got an email from Ben.
Kenobi. The feedback is just Mark Hamill saying Ben.
Yeah, I mean, is this old Ben? Is he related to Obi-Wan Kenobi? I'm very confused by this, by who Ben is.
Old Ben Kenobi, the hermit?
Maybe. No, couldn't possibly be. Chris, what does Ben have to tell us?
Okay, so Ben, actually, Ben has quite a few things to say. He has a question for each of us, too. So
he does, which first, I think is kind of cool. Thank you.
So first, I'm going to read the email first and save the questions for last. He says, great show, guys. I love the banter and that you guys stay spoiler-free when it matters. On your newest show about showing Rebels 5 times in one day, I remember them doing that with cartoons in the 90s. It would be the same before school and after school.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to see Rebels since I'm waiting for it to be on a streaming service so he can binge watch it like I did Clone Wars.
It'll probably be on the Disney streaming service.
Probably will, yes. I would love the main saga movies to follow the Skywalker family throughout the generations and use the extra movies to explore different elements of the universe. Maybe a buddy cop or Dumb and Dumber type movie starring 3PO and R2-D2.
Oh, gosh.
That would be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
And they said, thanks again for what you guys do, Ben.
The problem is, if we strike Ben down, he'll become more powerful than we could ever imagine.
That is true. So are you guys ready for the questions?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, well, I'm listed first in the email, so I'm just going to do me first.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Chris, if they made an audio drama of new stories, would you listen to it? Absolutely, I would. In fact, if the audiobooks were a little bit more accessible that I didn't have to buy them, and I know there are a couple places where you can buy, like, a streaming type deal for audiobooks, like just pay a certain fee and then get, you know, streaming to audiobooks. I would do that. In fact, I did do that for a while with TuneIn, and I don't know if they still do it or not, but the way they did it was a little clunky, so I didn't follow through with it. But I think I'd be more apt to listening to some of the Star Wars stories if I had them accessible like that. Cause I just don't want to buy, you know, a book.
Well, but particularly here, he asks about audio dramas, and I think
that
audio dramatizations would be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Especially cause you know, you would have first of all, you would have a cast,
right?
Of course. Mm-hmm. And rather than just like narration the whole time, which depending on the writing style of how it's written can get bland and boring and really bring a story down.
Right.
Audio dramas allow, I think, for a little bit more creativity, and you're less likely, even if it's not the best, like, you know, character dialogue, you might have a good story or vice versa.
Yep.
And, you know, they're just more interesting and, in my opinion, a little bit more easier to follow.
Yeah, a lot more fun, a lot more dynamic. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool idea. I'd love to see something like that happen.
Yeah, and I know I'm kind of... I always lament the fact that I never got to, like, hear, you know, old radio programs.
Mm-hmm.
Back when, like, before TV, when that was the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that seems like a fun... You know, sit around the radio and listen to the daily story or whatever. But
yeah, they definitely are fun to listen to those. You can go back and, you know, get them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, since we're talking of audio dramas, I highly recommend listening to the fan audio dramas that Far Far Away Radio did for the Star Wars original trilogy, and I don't think they did Return of the Jedi yet, but they're also working on Star Wars Convergence, which is a totally original audio drama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when the release date for that is yet, but I know they're working on it.
And non-Star Wars related, but Thrilling Adventure Hour, which was written by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, who are now Star Wars authors. They've done a couple of I believe children's Star Wars books. Thrilling Adventure Hour, absolutely hilarious. It's all done in the style of old radio dramas. They have a variety of different stories. They're essentially no longer doing them. They stopped a little while ago. Once in a blue moon, something new will pop up. But there is several years of catalog stuff, and you can basically get them through iTunes, and they're awesome. They're fantastic. So that's my own recommendation for audio dramas.
So, Tim, Ben's question for you is, what did you think of the Jar Jar appearance in the Aftermath series?
And do you think they are done with the character?
On one hand, I think it was great that they actually acknowledged Jar Jar, that there was this little side story that, Chuck Wendig did for him. Because they could have gone without it and the character would just kind of, you know, be ignored in perpetuity and no one would ever give it a second thought of, you know, very few people ever, you know, scratch their heads saying, hey, whatever happened to Jar Jar? In terms of the story itself of him essentially becoming a street performer, because he was shunned by all sides, you know, I mean, kind of sad for the character. And really, I think what Wendig wrote was intended to be very sad. That you have someone who was a representative of their planet, that did, you know, did get relegated to being a street performer. Yeah, you know, it was too bad. I don't like Jar Jar that much to say, oh, hey, they should have written this really big, elaborate story on him and given him a noble end. But I would have
liked Jar Jar's noble end.
Exactly. Misa back. But I would have liked to see a little bit more for him. Do I think they're done with him? Yeah, I would. You know, unless something pops up as a short story somewhere or something, I think they're pretty much done with Jar Jar. I don't know that we'll ever see him again. There it is. There you have it.
All right. And then Lou, your question is this. Did you play any of the original Star Wars RPGs or miniatures game by West End Games or the miniatures by Wizards of the Coast in the early 2000s?
I did not, sadly. Heard about them.
That's it. There's your answer.
Yeah. Didn't do it. You know, I heard about the games. They were awesome. I have some of the cards that I've read through and so forth. Really cool stuff. Really cool art on them. But yeah, never got into that because I didn't have any friends. No, I didn't have any friends that played those back in the day when I was down in Florida. So sadly, no.
But you probably just let Ben down, Lou.
I probably did. Sorry, Ben.
All right, so that's all for Ben.
I could have lied.
And then now,
Ben, thank you for letting in, and thank you for a question for each of us. Yeah, I think that was
questions, cool. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. More people,
more should fans do should do that. Listen to you hear me? You're listening to me. Do that.
You don't.
Don't just write in one question. That's lazy. You hear me? No. Each one of us get a question. Be creative. Be kind and polite. Do it.
Yeah, you don't ask us all the same question, like naming Endor, the system, the moon, and the planet all the same thing.
All right. We have a comment from Liz.
And it's not the Random Chatter host, Liz. This is a different
Liz. It is a different Liz from our Facebook, actually. She writes, because this was right after we we released the J.J. Abrams episode.
Mm-hmm.
She says, okay, J.J. Abrams, I need to know what you think. And I'm totally confused about who is in charge of writing the Star Wars stories and how everything plays out. Does each individual director get to write the whole story? I'm still ticked at Abrams for taking one of the most iconic cinematic love stories of all time and disintegrating it into minutes on screen. Although I do love the whole Kylo Ren Rey dynamic being played out. I always imagined that after George left, there would be a panel of Lucasfilm creative superfans who got together and hashed out a great story for all the characters, not bringing in outsiders to do whatever they want with beloved characters. Who gets the ultimate say in what happens in the universe? And then she put a comment after that, talking about the how the decision-making is real secretive. She said, that is the only thing that bumps me out about George Lucas not being involved. This was his story to tell. Those characters were from his imagination. Despite how I felt about his directing and dialogue writing the prequels, I loved the story being told, and I never questioned it because it was his to tell. But now it seems as though they could be leaving it up to anyone.
Liz, I completely agree with your thoughts on Lucas. And while a lot of people were critical and continue to be critical about the stuff that he did, It was his. I mean, it was not owned by the fans, and it seemed that we had a lot of fans who were very... The fans became very possessive of this, and they became critical of him for, quote, ruining things and all that. Well, this was his vision. It was, you know, lest we all forget that a lot of this was actually financed by him, and it was his creativity. And sure, yeah, as fans, we can be critical of things to an extent. But, yeah, it was really his vision, and I do agree with you on that. In terms of JJ... You know, we talked about some of this in the last episode, and I got an opportunity with my very late minute call in to talk a bit about this. I'm okay with J.J. Abrams. I think he is a pretty visionary director, and The Force Awakens, for some of the faults that it had, I think was also pretty good. And we have to keep in mind that it's just the first part of a story. So, you know, we're just really getting introduced to the story arc, and I think we're going to see a lot of that get fleshed out in part two, episode eight, the Last Jedi. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. In terms of writing, I mean, there are writers. There's teams of writers that go behind these. Obviously, there's usually one or two very prominent writers that are in here. In terms of the input, you know, I mean, what you kind of describe, Liz, is something similar to like the story group. And I don't think the story group has a lot of input to the saga films. I think their real intent is to kind of make sure that everything else aligns with them. I think it's really the director and the principal writers that really have most of the say in terms of the detailed writing of the movies, but it also has to fall in line with the overall vision and direction of the producers, which Kathleen Kennedy and also J.J. Abrams, who since The Force Awakens has become a producer to some extent, at least as far as I understand it. Guys, what do you got?
Yeah, no, I think so regarding J.J., but you know, the whole end of her email, there were a question about loving the stories that Lucas did in, you know, maybe not his direction, but that's where he was, you know, where he excelled. He's a uh-huh. great storyteller. He's a great visionary for that. He's just not a great director. you know, I mean, give him the story, let him do all that stuff, and bring in somebody else to direct the story. I mean, a lot of times directors aren't even involved in the writing of the stuff they direct. They're given a script, they're interpreting some of the script a little bit, maybe, and changing some things, but for the most part, the story is written.
True.
So,
and we've seen that play out very differently with the directors of these current or these most recent Star Wars films, where they generally are involved in the writing. I mean, J.J. Mm-hmm. has been very involved in it, and we're seeing the same thing with some of the other films, where the directors are really
and I think
they're
it's
not just taking from the script; they're actually involved in changing the story. The script,
right? I think it's better if they are involved in the writing. I mean, most time it's not. I don't believe, but I think it's better if they are, because they're more invested. It's their story too. You know, they had a hand in crafting the tale that they're going to be putting onto film or onto digital media these days. And, you know, anytime you're more invested, you're going to own it. You're going to want to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the directors have a challenge of taking what's in writing and making it visual. And as they do that, there are certain things that they might say. I mean, it's like the same concept of, you know, take a book off your shelf and say, okay, make a movie out of this. Well, okay, you can use the general premise of the story, but you have to rewrite it, because right. books are not written to be visual. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of rewriting to do that. So I think the directors, when they're translating that stuff, they're saying, look, this scene as it's written is not going to work. We have to change it. And they ideally should be working with the writers. And when the writers write this stuff, good writers will have that vision of, okay, how is the director going to visually do this? But then also, overall, the writers are just simply challenged with getting a bunch of stuff on paper and knowing that the director's going to make some changes and alterations. But I think when they're working collaboratively, yeah, I think you get a better product.
I don't want to go off on like a different topic, but it brings up something.
Are you going to talk about Porgs?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're fine. You can go on whatever topic you want.
it sort of has to deal with what Liz was talking about. But first, that is that, you know, I think they were, well, the rumor is that the reason that Michael Arndt was let go from the project originally of TFA was that because it was a little more in line with what George's outline was of, you know, post Return of the Jedi Star Wars. And that's not what they wanted to do. So, you know, they cut him loose and brought JJ and Lawrence Kasdan on. And, you know, I think there's like general speculation about where that story was going, but I think a lot of it lies in the art book for TFA. And to be honest with you, I kind of prefer some of the things that we see in that art book than what we saw in the final project. And it just, I really appreciate George Lucas, especially from a storytelling perspective. You know, I think, you know, regardless of what your opinion is of the prequels, the general story was good. Yeah. Same with the original trilogy, and pretty much anything that he really has a role in that kind of like the plot process. I think it works. And then this kind of aligns with a question that I asked on Twitter. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Is the fact that Star Wars is basically being run by fans a good thing or a bad thing? And when I say run by, I don't necessarily mean like the higher ups of Disney and Lucasfilm. But, you know, a lot of people that work there or that, you know, deal with the films or the books or pretty much anything are fans, and it almost makes me wonder, are they the right people to be handling some of the creative decisions?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. On one hand, I definitely like to see the people who are involved in these decisions and the creativity and all that enjoying Star Wars and being fans of it and being protective of it. And you guys know, because I've voiced it several times, that I think that Kathleen Kennedy is being very protective of the franchise. And that tells me that she's a fan of it. And as are a lot of the other people who are involved in it. That said, when I look around, and I'm even looking in the mirror here and looking at myself saying, gee, what if I was in charge of a movie? What kind of thing would I do? Well, I would probably write a story that I would like to see happen, and maybe some others would like to see happen, but inevitably there are other folks who wouldn't like to see that. But then again, I guess the same could be said for anything. I mean, George Lucas could write stuff that people didn't like, and he did. I mean, you can't please everyone all the time. And that's a human fundamentality. Is fundamentality a word?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
But I'll let you pass.
I guess I would prefer that they be fans and not people that hate Star Wars, or have kind of a neutral opinion of Star Wars. So I guess I'm good with it, so long as their fandom is tempered in terms of what their own individual thoughts and ideas are of where this should go. It should be collaborative. And I guess that's what I'm putting out there. It's an interesting question, Chris, and it is very much related to what Liz is asking. I like it.
Yeah, I don't want to go too much longer, but I will say, Tim, you said that you don't mind fans being quote-unquote in charge as long as they are tempered about it. Do you think that is the case right now? Because I would, not in every single way and definitely not in the majority, but I think there are some instances since the Disney takeover where we've seen fans in charge of something or want to do something and it not work out.
Yeah, I think if things were more collaborative, I mean, if we took the story group or a group that was very similar to them, who would maybe even not necessarily do the detailed writing, because detailed writing is really left to an even smaller group of people. But to give some kind of general guidance to the stories and such, and to the continuity, I might be a little happier with that. I might be more inclined with that. When you really just have one or two people who are making decisions and on these, you know, very narrow threads of things, I think it kind of just becomes essentially them taking their own headcanon / fan fiction and turning it into something that's canonical and, for lack of a better word, true within the Star Wars universe. And yeah, it just needs to be tempered. It needs to be tempered.
You know, I don't know. I think that you can't get away from having fans in charge of Star Wars anymore. People that are involved in one way or another are probably a fan on some level, right? I mean,
sure.
People that work at Lucasfilm, you know, they didn't get those jobs because they weren't interested in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? I mean, you're probably going to have some sound engineer or something that shows up who's wearing a Star Trek shirt who says, screw this Star Wars crap. Probably, you know, the vast majority of people there are Star Wars fans, and they should be, and I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as you guys are talking, I'm trying to think about this, and you know, sure, there's some stuff that's gone wrong. Would it have gone wrong if they weren't super fans creating the stuff? Probably. I mean, you'd still have some failures. And I'm looking at, you know, a person who is a huge fan and doing a great job is, you know, in charge of Clone Wars and Rebels. Right? I mean, yeah. Dave Filoni has done a great job, and he is a self-professed fan, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He does this because he loves it. He's passionate about it. I mean, Chris, there's always some chance of failure with this stuff. And I think that even, you know, well, I should say, you're going to get fans that are going to be too over-the-top fandom about their own thoughts and not looking at the bigger picture for what's good for Star Wars as a whole. And that, I think, is where the trouble comes in. If you get somebody who has got a position of power now and doing things because this is what they always wanted to do, well, then, like Tim says, you need some temperament there to kind of set them on the right path, keep them on a straight and narrow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that I'm looking at my tweet right now, and as of 10:46 on September 19th, there's still 3 days left to vote. But I said, question for my Star Wars friends, do you think in general it's a good thing that mostly fans are in charge of this franchise now? Out of 33 votes, 55% said yes, 18% said no, and 27% said indifferent.
Interesting.
It's a lot of indifferent.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Well, and I think it's just because there's a lot of things to weigh. I mean, you want people to be fans, but you don't want that fandom to guide irrational decisions.
Yeah. And you don't want gatekeeping either.
Yeah, and we don't want the gatekeeping. And I think there can be a lot of propensity for that. But also, if people aren't fans and they're they may not have enough passion for that project. I mean, even some folks may even come into it not necessarily as a big fan, but when they're eating and sleeping and breathing it for months, they may very well become fans, and I hope that they mm-hmm. do, because that's what gives them passion for the project. But I mean, really what it comes down to in the end, you can't please all the people all the time.
Yep.
So, you know, there's always going to be critics, and there's always going to be people who said, well, hey, that's not the story that I wanted, or that's not the story that I expected. And, you know, they become very big naysayers about it. And again, I mean, I have no problem people expressing their opinion, but when they really start to, you know, rag on something hardcore, and they start to attack people, and they start to have change.org petitions to get a director removed from a movie, folks, you need to get some perspective. Star Wars is not that important. You know, and I consider myself a pretty darn big fan. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. But let's have some perspective in life. You know, we're sitting here right now in the midst of a good handful of hurricanes and some very deadly earthquakes going on around this world, not to mention wars and famine. Yeah, Star Wars is enjoyable, and it's a wonderful, pleasant break away from that. And it may have had significant meaning in our lives and gotten us through some rough points. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important. You know, and if I'm ruffling some feathers or hurting some people's feelings by saying that, so be it. I know that I can't please all the people all the time.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And on that note, I think we're going to wrap things up. Unless you guys have anything pressing you want to discuss, I think we've gone a little over our hour, or about an hour and a half, so I think we'll finish things up.
I'm good.
If anybody wants to send us any feedback on the episode, or just in general, questions for us, and questions for each one of us, as Tim said, you can do so by sending an email to echobase@randomchatter.com. That's the best way to reach us. It does go to all three of us. So shoot away.
You can find us on our social media accounts. We have our Facebook, which is facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. We have our Twitter account at Echo Base Podcast, and then the network Twitter at Random Chatter. My Twitter is at The Curse of Chris. Lou, what about you?
Just my name. It's Lou Secchi, L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I.
And Tim?
At Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's.
And don't forget about all of the other shows on the Random Chatter Network at randomchatter.com.
Fantastic. Folks, get out there. Please spread the word and support us. If you like what we're doing, you know, tell people about it. You're telling, you know, you encounter other Star Wars fans. Ask them if they listen to any podcasts. Give us a mention. We definitely appreciate that. Leave us some reviews on places like iTunes and Stitcher, wherever you happen to listen to us from. Click all the stars and write in some great narrative about what we do. It's, you know, that's going to really draw people to it as they kind of go through the huge list of Star Wars podcasts that are out there, and there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of good ones too. So, you know, people have limited time and they got to figure out what's out there. So yeah, just be sure to tell people about us. We also appreciate some financial contributions. Anything that you can do, even a dollar a month, helps us to deal with our, you know, website fees and our hosting fees and our data storage fees and all that kind of stuff that does need to be paid for. Patreon.com/randomchatter. You go to that website, you can see all the different levels of contribution that you can do. And actually, you can do anything in between those. So we have like 1, 5, and 10, and it goes up from there. But if you can do $2 a month or $3 a month, that's cool too. You do that amount, you'll get the $1 a month perk. If you can hit $5 or $6 or $7, you'll get the $5 a month perk. Just $1 a month gets you access to our Slack channel, which we mention pretty darn often. Pretty much every episode that we do, we mention Slack or some of the folks in Slack. And basically, Slack is just an online discussion group. You get to hang out with us. You get to hang out with the host, tell us how wrong we are about things, or tell us how you know, if you appreciated something, and get some good dialogue going. We have other hosts in there. We have some of our staff. We have other listeners and fans who are part of it. And it's just a really fantastic community. It's something that most of us tend to hang out for good parts of the day, probably too much. So, patreon.com/randomchatter. If you want to go, I mean, I think the perks go up to like $30 a month. If you want to throw $100 a month or $1,000 a month or $1 million flat fee at us, hit us up. It's you know, the perk is negotiable. If you want Lou and I to show up at your house and do a pork barbecue, by gosh, we will do it. we just got to figure out an amount to get us there, and that'll work. Patreon.com/randomchatter. Chris, go.
Finally, the music you hear in this podcast is The Force Theme by Scandroid and The Imperial March by Cell Dweller.
And that brings us to the end, so we'll come at you in another week or so. Thanks, guys.